Welcome to The Walrus and the Carpenter. My name is Jason Allegood. I'm the teaching pastor of Fellowship Bible Church in Peoria, Illinois. And with me, as always, is Gary Gear, pastor of Calvary Baptist Bible Church, also in Peoria. Gary, besides your well-known high score of Wild Gunman at the 80s Cafe, what is your experience with video games?
I've stopped playing for the most part. I used to play StarCraft with my coworkers back when I was in aerospace, and I still pull out Civilization now and then, but because you can play four turns and shut it down. But dude, I remember back, you know, the old Star Wars. What was the one they did set 2,000 years before? I can't even remember. It was like a role playing thing, and I used to play like crazy, but in the last probably 10 years, I barely touched them. I played Kingdom Hearts with my son when that first came out. He and I would play that together. But no, I don't do much. Now, there is an arcade museum about 30 minutes from here that I plan to go visit and have a pocket full of quarters.
Nice.
And waste an afternoon
there,
at.
There was a hipster bar downtown
it's
Peoria.
Still there.
Is it still there? Okay,
it's
they've
still
got
there.
They've got old video games
yes.
in that bar.
This is like a hotel with a whole bottom
okay,
thing.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And I have no illusions that this will be nostalgia, and it will be very ugly nostalgia because I don't have the reflexes anymore.
So I grew up with my first video game experience was at the arcade at the convenience stores. You know, they had Donkey yeah. Kong or whatever, and then we got the Atari 2600
right.
when I was a kid.
Right.
You were probably a teenager, early 20s, early 30s when the Atari 2600 came out.
Don't even start. Don't even start your grotesque excuse. No, it was 2600 for us. What I
yeah.
would do is the high school I went to my sophomore year had open campus, and there was an arcade just right down the street.
Yeah.
And I would spend all my lunch money on playing Dragon's Lair. And,
sure.
And that was
amazing.
Xenius.
Yeah.
yeah. And
yeah.
my mom would be like, why are you so hungry when you get home? Did you eat your lunch? And I would say, I ate everything I had available.
Yeah.
And I would kind of screw it, which I'm not terribly proud of.
Yeah, so we did the Atari 2600. We had the arcade down the road. We had, we upgraded. At least it felt like an upgrade to me to the Commodore 64, and I had some games that I love to play on there. Skate or Die. Now fast forward to Tony Hawk Pro Skater. I'm all about skateboarding, and just got the refurbished remastered ones for the Switch that we have in our home now. But why in the world are we talking about video? Video games. Well, we have the...
It's Jay Tonkray's fault.
We have the honor and privilege of having Dr. Matthew Millsap on with us today. Matt serves as Director of Library Services and Associate Professor of Christian Studies at Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. I had the joy of having him as a professor in my PhD studies and now have the joy of calling him a colleague. Matt is married to Susan, and together they have three children, and they are members of Antioch Bible Baptist Church in Gladstone. We're going to be talking with him a bit about his dissertation, Playing with God, a Theoludological Framework for Dialogue with Video Games. And so that's the reason for kicking off the show talking about video games. Matt, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate the invitation.
Definitely, man. So excited. And we mentioned your dissertation on a previous program. I think it was one we did on anthropology. And so one of our listeners said, hey, you need to have Dr. Millsap on and talk about that. So before we jump into that, can you tell us a little more about your family and your work at Midwestern and some of the places your research has taken you, even like outside of Christian circles?
Sure. Yeah. So like you said, I serve as Director of Library Services here at Midwestern, and so that's my primary role. So most of my time is spent in the library and doing the library-related things. About to wrap up my Master of Library and Information Science degree with the University of Missouri, so I'll be finishing that up and graduating with that in December. But then also, like you said as well, I do some teaching additionally for the seminary. I teach some courses in Spurgeon College, which is our undergraduate school, and then also teach some with my colleagues here at Midwestern's PhD seminars, like you mentioned before. And when it comes to family life, I have three kids, and they're at ages now to where the oldest two are teenagers, and my youngest He will be turning 12 next year. So we're at these ages and stages now where there's a lot of coming and going and a lot of sure. different activities in their lives that keep us pretty pretty busy. My daughter, she just recently turned 16 and is now able to drive. So that's a whole new adventure for me and my wife as well.
For sure.
And don't forget your car insurance premiums.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, they they skyrocketed as a result of that. So, but we're not quite ready to admit, I guess, that our daughter is able to get out on the road, and lots of prayer involved with that as
for
well.
Sure.
Yeah, but when it comes to my work as far as research interests and things like that, as you mentioned, my dissertation is on theology and video games. That's taken me some interesting places. So I guess I'm trying to remember what year it was. I want to say 2017 maybe. I presented a paper at the Popular Culture Association's annual meeting, and in their game studies sort of subgroup. And it was a paper that had to deal with games and a particular video game, and its Trinitarian, or I should say kind of like anti-Trinitarian conceptions within the narrative of that game. It was actually, it began as a proposal for the annual meeting of the Evangelical Theological Society that was turned down mm-hmm. for that year. So then I decided, I may try to modify this and kind of shifted a little bit from confessional theology into kind of just more religion, Christianity in general, mm-hmm. to see if I can gain some interest over here in this other realm, which would be, just game studies as an academic discipline. And so the paper proposal was accepted and went to the conference in San Diego and presented it there. And so that was a welcome opportunity. It was very interesting. I got a lot of really I would say well-formed and well-thought-out and interesting comments and questions there. Many of the individuals who were there at the conference and were interested in the game studies side of things they weren't believers.
Sure.
But nonetheless, they interacted with me in good faith and had lots of very good and interesting questions that I was happy to engage with them on.
Well, that's wonderful, Matt. So just thinking about that, idea of it almost seems like as perhaps our listeners are even thinking this at this time, like that would be more of the world where something like that would fit. And yet you wrote your dissertation on, theology and video games. Maybe just to kind of set the groundwork here a little bit, I'm going to ask you just two questions back to back and let you lay that groundwork for us. What is ludology, and why do we as Christians need to be aware of this and the theological impact, for lack of better ways of saying it, the theological impact that video games have?
Sure, yeah. So ludology itself is just the technical academic term for the study of games and the way that games work or operate. So ludology by itself does not necessarily strictly apply only to video games,
sure.
rather to just games, period.
Sure.
But ludology as applied to video games is a very similar concept, right? So if we were thinking of a game that probably many of us are familiar with, like American football, having certain rules in place and the way that game is played, mm-hmm. ludology applies to that because it would be a study of the way that the game mechanics work and how that they interact with one another and all the components that are part of that. You could take that same idea and apply that to video games, and you have a similar understanding there as well. So really just kind of the study of games and the way that they work. Now, taking ludology and applying that specifically to video games and to us as believers, really it has to do, I would say, with the fact that video games are such the cultural phenomenon that they are today. Mm-hmm. In terms of, like the spending when it comes to video games, I don't remember the exact statistics off the top of my head, mm-hmm. but I know that, that video games bring in more dollars per year than box office receipts do, for
wow.
movie theaters. And that's pre-pandemic, of course, that
sure.
took a major hit during the pandemic. But even before the pandemic, video games were already outpacing you know, movie ticket sales to the tune of billions of dollars per year.
Wow.
And so when you look at the statistics on the number of Americans who play video games, you know, that's an extremely high number as well in the millions. When you look at the ages, you find that there are more adults who play video games than there are children under the age of 18. So really, in terms of the cultural impact that games have, they've really transformed from something that, you know, kind of like began in the arcades for adults that then sort of morphed into a plaything for kids in a way, and then has now sort of kind of matured as a medium to where just about everybody, you know, plays games of some sort, even if it's something as simple as, you know, they're waiting in line at the grocery store, so they pull out their phone and play Words with Friends or something like that, you know?
Right. Right.
One of the things you say in your dissertation is you talk about the level of engagement of different forms of media, whether it be books, whether it be film, music, and so forth. And you put video games in there and not so much create a hierarchy, but you define them by how much engagement takes place in the person's life. Could you summarize the way that you look at that?
Sure. Yeah. So each one of those categories, if you will, they have a certain level of engagement that's attached to those. And some of the way that with the technological development that we've experienced, you know, as a human species, has been such that it sort of pulls and shifts people along a continuum, if you will, of a level of engagement from previous forms of media to more recent forms of media. So, for example, you know, when you go all the way back to, say, you know, the invention of the printing press and the impact that that had on the ability for individuals to receive written information and how quickly they were able to receive it compared to the old days when it had to be hand copied and things like that, that, of course, naturally lent itself to the development of fiction, right? And so you had periods in which fiction was widely read by those in society who were literate. And so they weren't reading just strictly nonfiction books or things that had to deal with facts or even, say, like theological works or treatises or things like along those lines. They were also reading things for pleasure, stories that were not actually true, but they nonetheless wanted to read these stories and experience them. Well, as you kind of progress technologically, right, we then move later on from that point to the moving image on the screen. So, you know, you have the development of movies, which initially started out silently, of course, and then later on had the ability to add sound in terms of both dialogue and music to those. And as you get the development of the moving image and you get, you know, the development of television and movies at the theater, you see sort of an overtaking, if you will, statistically, if you look at that in terms of the number of individuals who will read for pleasure on a regular basis versus the number of individuals who will, say, watch a television show or watch movies for pleasure on a regular basis. And so this engagement, if you will, you know, the engagement that was there previously very heavy in terms of the written word has then shifted to engagement that is very visual heavy. And then as you develop video games and video games become more mature as a medium, I think what we're starting to see is that engagement shift once again from just the standard moving image on the screen in terms of someone sitting down on the couch and watching a TV show or watching a movie, whether at home or in the theater. We've seen that shift in engagement move over to video games now, to where video games are almost sort of overtaking the level of attention that people are willing to devote to these activities that they are engaging in for, you know, for recreation. And so as a part of that engagement, you move from a spectrum to, in terms of the level of active involvement that is necessary in order to engage each one of those mediums. So when it came to the written word, right, you're reading, say, like a novel, and you're visualizing in your mind what's taking place there with the characters and so forth. So that's a little bit more active, if you will, than having something just simply presented to you. As you move into the moving image on the screen, whether television shows or movies, that tends to be more passive in the sense that you're watching all these things take place. You're not having to imagine it yourself because it's all there and presented on the screen and acted out for you. And so you're just more or less kind of sitting there taking it all in. And then when you shift over to video games, you go more active again, but you actually go even more active than you were on the front of literature, because this time when it comes to video games, you're actually a participant in the media in a way that you weren't whenever you were dealing with fiction or with the moving image on the screen, because you're having to actually, you know, input things, whether through your controller or your keyboard or mouse or whatever. You're controlling the characters, you're participating in the narrative. In many cases, you're making decisions as to what the characters do and how the narrative progresses. So really, you get to games now, and you know, who knows, they may be superseded by something else later on down the line. But at least for right now, you have the most active level of engagement that's required for the medium itself, as well as a sense in which many people are moving over to interactive media like video games, away from more passive experiences that are now more traditional, such as movies and television shows. I hope all that made sense.
It does. And I'm going to ask a corollary question to that that kind of spins off at a different angle. But how do you, and by the way, I appreciate so much the way you've articulated that. How do you see the current participation in video games? How has that shaped the believer's perception of people, of other people who are outside of the game, or the image of God in man? I know I may be seeing like I'm getting a little bit oblique there, but do you understand what I'm asking?
Where, I think so.
Yeah, where if someone spends, because video games now is such a huge draw, I'm not speaking in moral terms, but just technical terms, is, and so much of the interaction is with, I guess you'd say, male or human characters or online gaming. Have you seen at all how that has shaped this current generation's viewpoint of the image of God in man? Maybe that'd be a better way to put that.
Sure. I wouldn't necessarily call myself a video game apologist, although, you know, a lot of people may view me that way in right. terms of what I say publicly about them sometimes. I mean, I am a fan and do enjoy playing games, but I also recognize their limitations as well as potential dangers, you know, that they might have along the way as well. So in all honesty, in answering your question, I would say that I suspect that it more than likely has more of a devaluing effect rather than a valuing effect in terms of the way that video game players understand the image of God in their fellow human beings and how they then act according to that understanding, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I think there's some overlap there, honestly, too, in terms of maybe video game players and engaging other types of media as well, where they might have similar understandings, but not necessarily to the extent that you have with games, considering that there's always going to be sort of this uncanny valley present where the human characters that you're seeing on the screen, they are as realistic looking as they, you know, probably can be, but at the same time you still know that it's not an actual human being. Whereas if you were, say, just watching a movie, you recognize that person is actually someone who exists and is just simply acting out that character that they are portraying in the movie.
So in your dissertation, you draw a distinction between sort of like a Tetris-type video game versus a narrative video game for what you're interacting with in your research. And that's been about, 7 years ago or so that you did that. Have you seen a shift at all toward one or the other kind of game play, especially now, like you just said, you can pull out your phone now. I don't think in 2014 it was as prominent as it is today that you can just have, I remember PSP and things like that and now the Switch, but that's fairly bulky as compared to pulling out your iPhone and playing a game. Have you noticed depending on how much you interact with these kind of things, like a shift towards one kind of gameplay or another? And if there has been that shift, does that kind of change some of your perspectives on things?
Yeah, it's a great question. I don't know if I've noticed one overtaking the other necessarily, because when you're talking about games just in general, or video games in general, mm-hmm. I should say, you have sort of what you might refer to traditionally speaking as two separate player bases. Mm-hmm. You had the first base, which was considered more casual, and then you had the second base, which a lot of times is referred to in the community or within the video game industry as the hardcore base.
Sure.
And the casual base were the ones who were more attracted to very simple games that don't require very much of a time commitment, typically don't have any type of narrative attached to them, or if they do, it's a very simplistic one. Whereas you had the more hardcore audience typically attracted to sort of like these AAA blockbuster experiences that mm-hmm. you would view as akin to, say, like a blockbuster, summer blockbuster at the movie theater, mm-hmm. that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know,
like Far Cry or something
value,
like that.
Yeah. Right, yeah, big yeah. production value and story and everything that goes along with that.
Mm-hmm.
So there still is a sense in which there's a bifurcation between those two audiences, although I think now I would say that we find ourselves in 2021 versus, say, 2014, whenever I completed the dissertation 7 years ago. Now I think that we're kind of in a situation in which that distinction is more blurred than it's ever been before, and you see a lot of overlap between those two. So, for example, I am a member of several different video game communities, for lack of a better term, on message boards and forums on the internet. And so I'm on those to interact because I enjoy interacting to a certain extent, but I'm also on those because I like to kind of keep up with trends and see what people are talking about, and, mm-hmm. and that assists me, you know, research wise as well, and kind of keeping current. And what I've found is that you have individuals who kind of transcend those two traditional categories.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, they may in one instance, you know, for a month play some game that is a really large demand on their time, and it's very narrative focused and has huge production values, and then sort of flip after that and spend most of their time playing just, you know, very short experiences on their smartphone, and then later go on back to a AAA experience, and then go back to, say, I don't know, playing Mario or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, much, much simpler and much more family friendly and geared towards a broader audience.
Mm-hmm.
So, I would say that that distinction, honestly, now is probably more blurred than it has been in the past.
And an interesting point, and I don't know if you have this in your dissertation, but it's far easier to become part of a for lack of a better term, of a gaming community than, let's say, one that is focused around books or movies, because you've got the modding group with whatever game that you're talking about. And I thought of the whole Cyberpunk 2077, where the whole product ended up being in the dumpster, and the people who were participating could push back and get the company to take the product back, which you can't really see in any other media. I think games are very unique with that. Where,
that's a good point.
Where it requires a level for the community to come together and to, for lack of a better term, demand what their experience is going to be.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think that can be both positive as well. An example there, you know, the positive side would be, for example, like you said, with Cyberpunk 2077, where the game was clearly released in an unfinished state. And, you know, the gaming community, the consumers of the product, as it were, realized that it was and demanded, you know, either their money back or for it to be fixed, or in some cases, you know, both, depending on the terms of the stores, like the online platforms that they were using and things like that. So that could be viewed from a positive perspective, right, in the sense that here's a video game company that intentionally tried to release an unfinished product to a community for them to purchase that they realized was then unfinished, and kind of fought back against that. On the other side of that, I would say you have sort of the toxic ways that can go. That would, a prime example there is, I don't remember when it was released, but you mentioned the Mass Effect series earlier.
Yeah.
When we were talking before.
Yeah.
the recording began. When Mass Effect 3 was released.
We don't talk about Mass Effect 3, okay? We just don't know. We don't mention the ending here, yeah.
Right, yeah. So you know where I'm going with this,
right? Exactly,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, the Mass Effect 3 ending, as far as the community was concerned, was a major disaster. And so there was a sense in which that community then attacked the Mass Effect developer, BioWare, online and launched, you know, more or less a pretty vociferous campaign saying the series should have never ended this way. We demand that you re-edit the ending and turn it into something else. I'm trying to avoid, you know, spoilers here and everything for anyone who might want to play that series later on. But BioWare ultimately ended up acquiescing to the demands. And they redid the ending of the game. And so, like you mentioned, you know, when you're talking about, say, other media, can people do that with a movie? Of course they can't, right? So, maybe they've attempted to do it before and it's been unsuccessful and I just don't know about it. That's always a possibility, I suppose. But doing something like that with, say, like I went to a movie theater and I didn't like that ending, and so now I'm going to organize a group of people to kind of lobby the distributor of the movie or the producer to go and change the ending to what I think it should have been, something like that would be unheard of, right? And yet it actually happened when it came to a video game.
Yeah, that's, and that actually leads into a question that I have, which is where do the creators of video games fit into this paradigm that you've researched and this kind of a thing? What part do they play in all of this?
Well, I mean, so they're there in terms of the authorship of the game itself, if you will. And so in terms of creating it, one of the points that I bring up in the dissertation is that when you're dealing with games, they are limited in a sense, right, in that you are within the confines that are set by the video game developers. So your actions, you may have freedom to move within this organized structure, but it's still nonetheless a structure that is in place, and there are rules that cannot be violated, much in the same way that we would say that there are laws of the universe that cannot be violated, right? Such as, the effect that gravity has on me while I'm here on Earth, right? So I'm bound by those laws and those parameters that are set in place. I can't go flying off into the air even if I wanted to. So the similar situation there when it comes to games themselves, in that you have freedom, but it's only so much freedom as the game developers have allowed you to have. And so to the extent that a game has a narrative, and to the extent that you have choices to make within that narrative, you know, perhaps you can answer a dialogue tree one way, and that takes the narrative one way, one direction. Or you can answer the dialogue tree a different way, and that takes the narrative a different direction. Those are still choices that are put in place for you to make by the game designers themselves. And you only have one way to go or the other way to go. You know, it's still going to be a predetermined outcome either way, even though you're exercising a certain amount of freedom within that construct to make those choices.
Yeah, and that's an interesting point as well. And I remember the first time I played, I think it was Morrowind. Is that Elder Scrolls 3 or 4?
Oh, goodness. I mean, it is an Elder Scrolls game, but I can't remember.
I think it's 3.
It would be 3, I remember.
I just remember feeling like so immersed in that world, and like this felt like a never-ending world, but yet you knew there had to be boundaries somewhere. It kind of continued to create, and it kind of reminds me, as you just mentioned that, of this concept of God as playwright, I can't remember where I heard this recently. Someone was talking about a good way to maybe think about time and space and all these kind of things is thinking about God as, you know, writing himself into the story and some of those kinds of things, and just how perhaps even thinking about the way that gamers, if you will, the immersive type hardcore, as you would call them, maybe it shapes their worldview a bit about the world that they're in. It kind of correlates to what Gary had asked you earlier about humanity and those kinds of things. So what were you going to say,
yeah,
Gary?
Yeah, I guess the question or one of the, well, actually, if you could go ahead and complete your thoughts, Stern, and I'll jump on with the question after that.
No, I was actually going to say, you know, a lot of times the gaming community is kind of painted, for lack of a better term, in the light of being antagonistic towards religion. Mm-hmm. And so that is, and by that I mean not necessarily antagonistic towards Christianity. I mean antagonistic, sure, towards religion, period.
Right.
And to be fair, you know, many individuals within the video game community are. Mm-hmm. But I would actually argue that they're more primed for, you know, a right understanding and an acceptance of the Christian meta-narrative than you might initially think. And a lot of that has to do with what I just previously described in terms of they are used to participating in these narratives where they know that they have a certain amount of freedom, yet there's still an overall design and an overall goal, a telos, if you will, that, sure, they are moving toward. And so I see a parallel, honestly, between that, you know, and a right understanding of the Christian meta-narrative, especially, say, from a Reformed theology perspective,
sure,
too, in terms of, you know, whether you're dealing with questions of free will and those types of things, and God's sovereignty, you know, there, I think that there's an interesting parallel to where they are willing to accept that when it comes to being in a video game world, mm-hmm, yet tend to kind of, you know, reject that whenever it comes to a broader understanding of, you know, whatever their own meta-narrative is.
Sure.
And so I wonder if there are ways that those who are trying to kind of bridge that gap or maybe even to approach the video game community evangelistically, mm-hmm, might be able to sort of draw on some of those theological concepts to kind of help usher them along that path in realizing that it's not quite the disparity that they think it is.
Which kind of dovetails into my question, just kind of a rubber meets the road thing. When you're talking about discernment for the believer and interacting with any media, of course, there's some basic principles and some of it is determined by the mode of the media itself. If you were to tell someone, hey, these are some areas which you need as a believer to show discernment with when you approach a game, what are three or four areas that you would just encourage them to think wisely about?
Well, this is a great question. It's one that I kind of do a similar discussion of in one of my lectures on video games in my Christianity and the Arts course at Spurgeon College.
So we don't have to take the course now, so you can just tell us.
Exactly. Yeah, this is for free. So yeah, just listen to the podcast. And, yeah, you can market it that way. No, I'm just kidding. No, but really, whenever we address that and kind of how I'll choose to answer it here for our purposes, is one of the questions that I first try to get my students to think through, and knowing that many of the students in my course are probably going to have experience with video games prior to entering the course and may even be, quote, gamers themselves, is why are you even playing the game in the first place? Mm. And the reason I say that is because, you know, we've entered an environment now where it's all too easy to do everything you possibly can to avoid having to become lost in your thoughts or to be contemplative, to be reflective. Even when it comes to things such as, you know, I don't know, even scripture memorization or ruminating on scriptures, things like that, where it's all too easy, for example, in moments in the past where you had no other choice but to do those activities, now you can supplant those by pulling out your smartphone and playing a game, or pulling out your smartphone and browsing social media, or doing anything to sort of take you away from the fact that you are having nothing else to do in that moment and you don't want to have to think through things deeply. Well, when it comes to games, I think that there's a similar tendency there where, you know, sometimes you're just playing a game because it's something to do or something to fill the time. And so I try to get my students to think with more intentionality in terms of why is it that I want to play this game in the first place right now? So, you know, if it's a game that is a very simple game on their smartphone, it may be because I've got a few, you know, 5 minutes to kill and I want to do something fun. If it's a game that I know is going to require much more of a time commitment and it's more narrative focused, my reason for playing that could be entirely different, right? I'm not using it just simply pass the time. It's a narrative that I want to experience or a narrative that I want to analyze or think through in some way, or maybe it's a game that I've heard from other people who have played it, that it has, you know, a lot of profound themes to it. It deals with human nature much in the same way that like a prestige drama would.
Okay,
In the movie theater, things like that.
Pausing right there, can you tie that into the biblical concept of rest? And I'm curious how. I mean, I think there is a correlation there. I'd be very curious to see your approach to that.
Yeah, I think you can, because I view games recreationally in the way that other people view other activities that have been more traditionally termed recreation in terms of the amount of time and the amount of energy spent in those. So, for example, you know, you might have someone who would have no problem whatsoever spending, you know, I don't know, 3 hours watching a professional baseball game on TV, who would turn around and tell a fellow believer that them spending 3 hours playing a video game was a waste of their time without even considering, you know, the 3 hours that they spent, you know, watching that baseball game, just simply because it's a video game, right? They're like, yeah, video games are a waste of time. Why would you possibly want to spend your time or whittle away your time, you know, just sitting there with a controller for 3 hours?
Well, if it's the Cubs, it's a waste of time. So...
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So, you know, when they think of it in those terms, like strictly right. In terms of waste of time. But I think alternatively, you can kind of flip that over on its head and say, well, you know, why would the person spend 3 hours watching an MLB game, you know, on the TV or in the app or online or whatever? And the reason they do it is because it's a recreational activity for them, right? They're not doing it as work. They are doing it as recreation or as rest, if you will. And so it's kind of a transformation of the mindset, if you will, of individuals who think that way in terms of there are multiple avenues for recreation besides whichever one is your own personal preference.
Right.
And so, you know, these people who are spending what you view as an inordinate amount of time playing video games are actually experiencing recreation in a very similar manner to you, just albeit with different activities than the ones that you chose.
Okay. Well, Dr. Millsap, we're coming to the end of our time here. I just wondered if you would have any place where people can go to read more on what you think about these things or others think about these things. Do you have any resources, or are you currently in the process of publishing anything, or where can people go to hear more from you or more about this issue?
Oh yeah. Well, so I am on Twitter, and occasionally we'll tweet things about games on there. And so my Twitter handle is Matt Millsap. So it's Millsap, MILLSAP. Sometimes people do one L, some people say Millsaps, you know, different things like that, but it's MILLSAP. You can find me there. I haven't honestly really published anything in relation to theology in games or Christianity in games. I'd like to try to edit my dissertation and turn that into a book at some point. I've already made some progress doing that a little bit here and there. It's just a matter of finding the right fit for it, you know, publisher-wise and things
sure.
like that. Alternatively, if you want to contact me even via Twitter and you are interested in any of the paper presentations that I've delivered on these topics, I'm more than happy to share those with you so that you can read more there. I guess it was a few years ago published an essay in the Midwestern Journal of Theology where I did sort of a theological analysis of a video game called No Man's Sky and kind of related it to fulfillment of the cultural mandate in Genesis. And so that might interest some people. Just contact me, you know, whether it's via email or on Twitter or wherever, if you're interested in some of those things, and I'd be happy to share those.
Well, thank you so much. Another area that you spend a lot of time talking about, and we should have you back on eventually to talk about this too, is investments, and especially in regard to pastors and investing and those kind of things. And so I just a little plug there for the other thing you talked about on Twitter. So
Jason said that you remind him very greatly of Dave Ramsey. Yeah, you know, it's almost like you're a doppelganger.
You're going to get me in trouble.
I know. It's great. And I'm three states away.
Well, so I have to ask then, did Jason tell you that Dave Ramsey blocked me on Twitter?
No, but I that doesn't surprise me too much about Dave Ramsey. So
unfortunately, when it comes to justified criticism of some of his ideas and concepts on investing, he's a little thin-skinned, I suggest.
Well, hey, thanks so much for being on the show today, Dr. Millsap, and thank you guys for tuning in to the show. And if you have any questions or comments, come see us over at wallcarpradio.wordpress.com, or you can check us out on facebook.com, wallcarpradio, or Twitter at wallcarpradio, and leave comments, questions, or show ideas. We'd be more than happy to answer those there. Until next time, we'll see you then.
God bless.